Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.
Hello and welcome, everybody. I'm Adam Wozniak, and I'm here with my good friend and co-host,
Darren Parkinson.
Darren Parkinson, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great today. How you doing, Adam?
Doing well. And we are Biz Radio U. And today we have a very special guest. He's a CEO. He's a boxer. He's a writer. Mr. Turner Levinson. How you doing, Turner?
Oh, just living the dream, guys, one day at a time.
Turner Levinson. All right. So to start us off, why don't you tell us a little bit about your current ventures, Commission Track?
Well, we started Commission Track back in 2015. You can think of it as the QuickBooks for commercial real estate, an application of record for all things commissions, helping organize the back office for commercial real estate practitioners.
Okay, yeah, and I understand the commission part of commercial real estate is really, it's complicated and it's tricky and there's lots of steps involved.
You know, every contract or lease or sale is like a snowflake. They're going to be creative in how they get the deal done with both the commission structure and the timing of commissions when they pay and how they pay. So having everything kind of chaotic in the back office, we've created a simple way to organize everything into one platform and without thought, calculate commissions out as soon as checks come in.
And this is all online through your website, correct?
Right. It's a web application. So you access it from phone, from tablet, or from computer, anything with an internet connection.
Okay. Now, how did you get into that commission commercial real estate?
Well, I started off in banking at JP Morgan doing some portfolio analysis, and then one thing led to another. We can get to that story a little bit later, but I ended up at the Atlanta Tech Village as a first hire for a startup, helped grow sales there. One of the last deals I did was with Cushman Wakefield here in Atlanta, sold our software to them, and it really opened my eyes to the lack of overlap between technology and commercial real estate. It was kind of an industry just now starting to learn about the cloud and how to use it and what exactly that is.
Okay, so it sounded like your company started out with a problem and you saw a problem. So what was that problem you saw that you tackled?
That commission payments come in not really when expected, nor do they always come in for the exact amount. So in tracking commissions, there's an accounting problem. What happens when that check comes in for $10? How do you account for that in this chaotic spreadsheet that's typically used? So we've taken the chaos out of all of that and made it a simple platform that's keeping those ledgers for you, keeping those balances up to date and doing the calculations so there's no room for human error.
Oh, wow. So basically taking the accounting job and kind of making it a little obsolete, right?
You know, I don't know if we're making it obsolete. You'd still probably want a bookkeeper with some accounting background managing it. So I'm not looking to replace jobs.
Yeah.
I'm just looking to augment the mundane task of journal entries and calculating split plans and commission distributions.
Yeah.
So I'm just making their lives better, not replacing.
Yeah. No, I love it because it's you're an industry disruptor. So you come in there with a new, better method of doing something. And that's what it's about. That's what entrepreneurship is about, is coming in and solving problems and, you know, shaking things up a little bit. So I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for us, we think that real estate is kind of the beginning of being able to tackle all things commissions. But just as you said, we identified a real problem specifically in the commercial real estate market. We want to tackle that problem head on, really monopolize all things commissions in commercial real estate. And then we'll soon expand into landlords and property managers and helping them manage their commission payments to brokers, as well as get into the residential side, which is a market about 10, 20 times the size in terms of agents and brokers.
So, wow. And how did you get into real estate?
Well, I guess the start was that deal that I did with Cushman Wakefield, where it just was like plainly in front of my eyes that there was a lack of attention being paid to commercial real estate in particular. Very few apps being designed specifically for their set of problems. And after that deal, was not even 3 months later that I got hired for a part-time consulting side gig to help replace a custom piece of software that had been written for a commercial real estate brokerage back in the 90s.
Wow.
And that was LeaseCom. My now co-founder, Bill Krishlow, started writing that in 1994 in DOS in the early 2000s, upgraded that to a Microsoft Access database. So really getting futuristic there. And in 2015, we met as a result of me trying to replace his system. Mm-hmm. And I pretty quickly learned there wasn't anyone out there trying to solve the problem. So we agreed to, on the same day, found Commission Track together and have Commission Track acquire LeaseCom. It's 20 plus years of intellectual property and working with brokerages on this problem. And Bill, the secret magician that knows all things commission accounting, that's really enabled us to make a number one type platform that's not only enterprise grade, but can serve a brokerage shop of 2-3 people efficiently or of 100 plus.
And did you have any prior experience in real estate, or where did you go to catch up on that or just learn what you needed to do for this?
Well, I was fortunate in that I've got a couple of family members that are in range from property management to actually commercial brokerage on the tenant rep side. So from cousins, friends, family, even my dad in commercial real estate, I was able to catch up pretty quickly. Though I'm still learning on a day-to-day basis. You know, I'm bringing more of the operational and sales mindset to the organization, whereas I've got, you know, a great partner in Bill who has a rich 20-plus year kind of experience pool to draw on in terms of what we need to know and understand about the industry to effectively serve it.
And what are some of the ways that you and Bill work together to make this thing happen? Like, what are some of the, like, it sounds like you're like the yin and yang, and that's how you guys get things done. So hi, can you explain that relationship to me a little bit more?
That yin and yang is a pretty effective way of describing it. You know, Bill's a guy that comes from a very software engineering and accounting driven background. So as you can imagine, he's going to find every three-headed gnome that exists out there. If we're trying to work through a piece of logic or how to do a rather complex calculation, you know, my optimism is driving us to stay enthusiastic and to, you know, work that 100th hour of the week, whereas his cautious and very tactical approach makes sure we don't, you know, get to the end of a decision in terms of building out logic without thinking through every possibility that exists out there. And again, going back, he's got 24 plus years of experience where he's been bitten by those three-headed gnomes, where we think, no, that could never happen. He's like, actually, that did happen back in 1999 when I had originally written it similar to that for LeaseCom. So, no, it can happen and it will happen by laws of average. And then we have to work out a way to overcome, you know, that possibility. So I'd say yin and yang, my optimism balanced by his cautious nature.
And, I mean, it sounds like a great balance, but at the same time, when you have somebody that is a little bit on the other side of things, it does come. So how do you handle that? How do you come to resolutions?
Conflict is a good thing. If I came into our meetings where we're, you know, we have five plus people sitting at a table on the IT side, trying to come up with logic, trying to come up with wireframes on how it's going to look, even into design, UX, and UI, if we all agreed all the time, I'd have to disjourn the meeting and say, hey, let's come back when we have some unique ideas and are bringing unique perspective. I'm not looking for everyone to agree. So I view those kinds of, you know, we could call them arguments, we could call it constructive disagreements, but it always results in a better product for our customers.
So, I like that, constructive disagreements. Yeah, we have a couple of those. It works out though. And I'm interested in learning about how you got started in entrepreneurship. You get to UGA, correct?
I did, yeah.
All right.
Go Dawgs. Graduated from Terry in 2012 with a degree in finance. You know, quickly went to JP Morgan, got my Series 7, Series 66, and joined a couple of VPs over there to help with both marketing as well as that initial portfolio analysis, really kind of the legwork for doing a real portfolio review meeting with, you know, a family on $10+ million net worth minimum. So I was cold calling high net worth individuals and was pretty restricted to the C-suite of Fortune 500 companies or people who were filing Form 4s, meaning they're very wealthy, essentially. Yeah. And along comes this guy, David Cummings, in Atlanta. And that name may sound familiar from Pardot or from the Atlanta Tech Village. He was the guy who bought a random building in Buckhead and decided to create a 100,000 square foot plus co-working facility and really sparked off entrepreneurialism in Atlanta in general. Well, he bootstrapped Pardot. And there was an article in the Business Journal about him selling that company for $95 million and that he never took on outside investment. So most of that went in his pocket. And he's in his early 30s. And I'm thinking, I've been calling all these guys with gray hair that don't trust me because I don't have gray hair. So maybe I should call this guy who's closer to my age, but also has many millions of dollars and see if he'd be interested. Well, long story short, after quite the hustle, I finally get in touch with him and he is not interested. In fact, he was partial in convincing me to leave that entire industry. You know, I remember a quote from actually the CEO who ended up hiring me. You know, you're riding a dying horse. Your job's going to eventually be done by an algorithm. And I couldn't really disagree with him. So I was given an offer, you know, essentially by, as a result of my hustle for David Cummings. He said, you know, I'm not interested in JP Morgan, but me and a CEO, this guy, John Birdsong, started a company a few months ago. It's finally starting to get a little bit of traction. They've got a product and I think you would be a good fit to come in and help with operations and sales. Would you be open to meeting him? And one thing led to another. I ended up meeting with John. Turns out I was good friends with his younger brother in high school. It was a good fit. And I made the switch. Left the coat and tie and suit every day for t-shirts and hoodies. And you know, we grew that business pretty quickly. You know, in maybe 18 months, we went from zero in revenue, no paying customers, to 50 plus, 150,000 in annual recurring revenue. Got us through a another seed round, raised $500,000, continued growth. And then, you know, as that was stabilizing and starting to do well, I had this other opportunity. And at that point, I had the founder's bug. I wanted to start something of my own, and I had an opportunity to do it with a lot less risk. I acquired a company that had existed for 24 years and got to get to work with a guy like Bill.
Wow.
So it, almost by chance, I mean, I was sure in college that finance was my future, and it,
like most people are, they're dead set. This is what I'm going to do for, you know, 60 years.
So it took some convincing, but it really was a phone call that finally landed, and a guy who made me reframed everything I had thought and opened my eyes to the concept of founding and being the one that brokers are calling as opposed to calling high net worth.
So just that one phone call conversation made you want to change a tire?
It was like a chain reaction, maybe. So it started everything, which led to me looking at startups more seriously and getting interested in that concept. And then finally, you know, making the jump from a pretty cushy job at JP Morgan to a chaotic startup where, you know, thriving in chaos is a prerequisite.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as a finance guy, I mean, you understand dealing with risk, but a lot of people in finance, I mean, the reason they're in is because they know how to control risk. They take the best risks. That's how it works. So for you, that's kind of like reverse logic. You know, you go from like a really great position into this risky thing, starting up your own company. At what point did you say that, you know, I can actually do this? Like, you had the confidence to actually take this off? Because a lot of people have great ideas, but the thing about entrepreneurship, it's not about having an idea, it's about execution. So how did you personally take that step and to do that?
Well, I was lucky to have two parents that own their own businesses and have been lifelong entrepreneurs. So somewhere in me, the bug was already there. And I think innately, I was already interested in the highest risk assets out there. I specialized in analyzing non-traditional assets and alternative assets, hedge funds, and financially engineered assets. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed understanding the most chaotic and the most risky assets and understanding that sliver of people's portfolio. That's where I could bring value even at an inexperienced age in that industry. So the transition to even higher risk was fairly easy. To your point on execution, I couldn't agree more. Everybody has an idea. Executing and getting your ducks in a row enough to get even just some seed money to get started requires execution. But, you know, I'm a big believer in half of that is just showing up. Everyone can talk about an idea or a product that they want to build or a software they want to engineer, but very few take that first step. A 100,000-mile journey starts with one step.
So what's your advice for anybody that needs to take that first step? What's your advice for them to actually do that? I know it's as simple as saying just do it, but it's got to be more than that because, I mean, it comes with that drive, that confidence. Do you have any advice on how to cultivate that, to take that leap?
Well, I think some people are going to be more apt to take that first step than others. Mm-hmm. My advice would be find someone else that's passionate about what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And if you can find someone else, then it's infectious. That drive and interest, one person feeds the other and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Kind of back to that yin and yang. I mean, they should be the same and different at the same time. And if you can find someone else that's passionate about, you know, a common idea, two people come together, then the likelihood of additional steps being taken increase.
Yeah, kind of a common theme. We're saying like the dynamic duo. You know, like that's how you get it done.
So one thing about entrepreneurship, people don't realize it's not just saying I'm an entrepreneur. It's about having the perspective to see opportunities and see things and to see the world in a different way. So one way I think is how entrepreneurs view risk. And it seems like you view risk in a unique way. Can you define how you view risk for me?
I mean, I would just go back to it's a function of the risk-reward ratio that you can apply to just about any asset class. But I view risk as a barrier to entry that most people aren't willing to take on. So the highest risk chances also come with the highest reward. And the thing is, I don't really believe that this is a lottery ticket. Just like you said, it's a direct result of execution. I feel I have a team in place that will, along with myself, be able to execute and monopolize a market. And then from there, it's, again, just understanding your market, understanding how to better serve it, building product to better serve it, and then monetizing that product. So in short, I don't think startups are as risky as people make out. Now, if you're a entrepreneur and you're just thinking merely participating in a market,
say a entrepreneur?
Yes.
I like that.
And you're thinking, well, you know, I don't need to execute. All I have to do is participate in a massive market and just being there will be profitable is probably a mistake. And that is, of course, high risk. But if you have an idea where you feel confident that you can improve a process or make something easier by 10x the status quo, then you have something that is not as risky as most people would perceive it to be.
So chance is just sort of like it's not as, I guess, as real as you would think it is. The risk levels are kind of determined by how much effort you put into it or what you bring to the table.
I think that if you were to poll the public on the you know, a risk to reward ratio or how risky they felt startups are from a 1 to 10, that they would be much further on the spectrum to 10. It's the riskiest possible thing you could do than anyone who's founded a company.
Well, I think that also contributes to what they determine like success is for a startup, because that could be, you know, several different things. Like, you know, they get to, you know, a certain level of profit and then they sell and then that's it. They don't always become Walmart.
Not everyone's looking to create a $100 million business. Right. There's nothing wrong with creating a cash flow business, and a lot of fun can come from that as well. I think as you, the larger your goal is, of course, the more risk there is that you're not going to meet it. If you set out to create the new Facebook and make Facebook you know, essentially MySpace, what it is today, or Zynga.
Good luck.
Yeah, that's an ambitious goal. So, of course, the risk to reward profile is much greater. If you do it, it's billions and billions and billions of dollars. But the likelihood of doing it is much, much lower than, let's say, I'm going to create a new cooler that is better than, you know, any other cooler on the market, and I'm going to dominate the cooler market. And you can look at Yeti.
And you give it, so you give it an awesome name and quality product.
And some great marketing.
Yeti.
And you have yourself something that will create cash flow. Now, is Yeti going to change the world? No. But did they set out to change the world? I don't think so. So they're probably hitting the goals that, you know, they had set out to hit, which is create a great business and keep people's beers cold, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And, it's enough so much about your business. I want to ask a couple questions. Why don't you tell me a little bit about Georgia Follows?
Georgia Followers. So, great organization. I got involved with them, actually, you mentioned it before, through boxing. There's a charitable organization started by a buddy of mine from high school, Matt Thomas, called Brawl for a Cause, where boxers pick charities, they represent them, and then fight each other. They raise money together and then fight each other for that pool of money. And the winner takes the most of the money and it goes to their charity. But even the loser gets a little bit. So it's a win-win-win. The rare win-win-win. Through that organization, one of the other fighters, not who I was fighting, Buckhead Brawl, was a writer for Georgia Followers. And they were also kind of co-sponsoring the event, helping out. So a lot of them were around. I just got to know the guys, really enjoyed their company and kind of what their thoughts were on how to just really focus on a niche market, so Georgia, and provide really relevant content to them. And, you know, organically, without ads, they've gone in just a few years from zero to over a million followers on Twitter, a few million hits on their website, unique hits on their website per month. And I was given an opportunity to write for them. They just said, hey, if you want to write about business and startups, go for it. And you know, I don't get to write a ton for them, but I'd say about once a month or so, I'll write a Georgia business followers kind of piece on an entrepreneur or a business. And then, you know, they're also really helpful in getting access to events. So, you know, if I can say I'm with the press, then that never hurts in getting a free ticket.
Oh, yeah.
So, go ahead.
I'll say, I went to their website and I really liked the layout and the design. It's really, they got a strong website.
They did a good job, yeah.
Because I've seen some that are rough.
Well, they've had time to do it and, you know, they're constantly looking to get better. So that site's changed and evolved just as any good website will.
Oh, and shout out to Commission Track website.
Hey, thank you.
I really like that website. Like, I remember I was on it to do a little research about you and the company. And then the chat bubble come up and it's like, hey, you know, why are you, you know, hey, how can I help you? You know, why are you visiting Commission Track today? And it's you. And
yeah.
It wasn't a robot. It was Turner Levison. Like, I was just thoroughly impressed by that.
You know, we're constantly trying to use other softwares that are best at their game. And for website chat, that's Intercom. You'll also notice if you go to the Intercom website, we've used a lot of kind of their design tactics and those cartoons and explaining complicated concepts with really easy to understand graphically illustrated cartoons.
Yeah, because commercial real estate commission is, it's kind of complicated.
Yeah.
You know, and that the chart y'all had on there was, that helped a lot.
Yeah, people learn in three different ways, and we want to cater to all three: video, pictures, and text. So personally, I learn much quicker from a combination of pictures and text than I do from video. Some people learn almost exclusively from videos or lectures, in-person conversation. We just want to make it easy for you to understand Commission Track regardless of your learning style.
And I got to take it back. You mentioned boxing. You got to explain that a little bit more. Where did that start? That is, yeah, that's not something everybody does.
I guess it started in Athens when I was at Georgia. So I played rugby at Georgia on the 7s and 15s team. And the same friend, Matt Thomas, he went to Georgia as well. And that's where Brawl for a Cause got started, with Bulldog Brawl, Georgia Theater.
I played rugby at KSU for many years.
So, nice.
Yeah, and I'm originally from South Africa, so it's in my blood, so I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's the same here. My mom played for the U.S. women's team, coached at Florida State, so I grew up on the rugby pitch and you know, got my chance to keep playing at a higher level at Georgia. Grateful for that opportunity. These days, I just play at Piedmont Park and play some touch rugby.
I mean, you say that, but I do. I recall when we played you guys, well, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. We won. Yeah.
Hey, so, when I played, we went undefeated against KSU, but it was a big deal. Who's keeping track?
I guess I wasn't playing, but you know, I got
somebody's keeping track.
Yeah. I'll put it this way: I'm glad I didn't come up against you because you know, like that's one thing. Like I know we started this like talking about the boxing thing, but that's one thing that most people don't realize. And I think as a fighter, I'm not a fighter, but learning from fighters, I found really interesting that those are the people that if you come across, I mean, if you know anything about it or have any experience, you can pretty much take on anybody. But when you do that, you also understand the damage it can cause. And I've learned like people that are seriously skilled in this will say they will not take on a fight at all costs because they understand the risks of like, you know, in a street brawl or something like, because anything can happen. So
I've been in two fights, mm-hmm. and they were both for charity in mm-hmm. the boxing ring and officiated as though we were amateur boxers, which I guess we are licensed amateur boxers. And really, you know, solely because I played rugby, because I asked to fill in for someone who had injured their shoulder. They needed a last minute replacement. My friend Matt Thomas was like, "You'd be perfect. You'll win. I promise." The guy, you remember this guy from high school? Like, you should be fine. Well, I agreed. Had zero training.
Yeah,
the match was like 3 days after a tournament, so I hardly had really any time to recover. And I show up to weigh-ins, and the guy that I'm gonna fight later that night is like, "Hey, so how much training have you done for this?" I was like, "Oh, you know, not really any, but I mean, I play rugby." And he was like, "Oh," asked him the same question. He was like, "I mean, I've had a personal trainer for boxing for like 3 years running a couple times a week."
Oh, man.
So you can imagine that bout did not go well. Lost that one pretty quickly, though at least I didn't get knocked out. It was just 3 rounds to 0.
But I mean, you got in there. I mean, there's very few people that would actually take that on and do that. I mean, especially with someone that's been trained, stuff like that. I mean, it is, when it's in an organized setting, it's safer. There's rules. I mean, you mentioned a weigh-in, so that's really awesome. But to get in there and to do that, you know, like just have that confidence to it, that's incredible. Hats off to you. That's awesome.
Hey, chalk it up to my parents on that one. They instilled a lot of confidence growing up. And then, you know, certainly rugby helped as well. Yeah. And at least my blind confidence going in. Can't say for sure if I had been told this guy had been training with a personal trainer for several years running that I would have taken the opportunity to step in that ring.
Mm-hmm.
But it was almost that loss that, you know, drove me to come back to Brawl for a Cause and then again fight in Buckhead Brawl here in Atlanta.
And how'd the second one go?
I won that one.
Oh, nice. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, at this point, I probably am going to hang up my gloves in terms of competition. finish with a win. But I still really enjoy going to, like, boxing classes just solely for the exercise and the cardio. Mm-hmm. I mean, after a long day, nothing relieves some stress more than just punching stuff.
Yeah, that's one thing that people don't realize about rugby, because I played soccer all my life, and I played rugby for a good portion now, and it's funny, soccer is 90 minutes of people pretending they're injured, and rugby is 90 minutes of people pretending like they're not injured. So, yeah.
Yeah, what do they say? Rugby's a hooligans game played by gentlemen, and soccer's a gentlemen's game played by hooligans?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Like, I love soccer, don't get me wrong, but I mean, there's, certain qualities, that stand out.
Yeah, I'm starting to become a fan with FC United here in the hometown, but...
Yeah, I'm really excited about that too.
I'm still just learning kind of about soccer. My soccer career ended around fourth grade when I was a goalie, and my affinity for the slide tackle resulted in a suggestion by my coach that I try out football.
Yeah,
and then I stuck with football through high school and a combination of that and rugby.
Yeah,
just see, like I'd want to just get into soccer so I can get into that new stadium early. You know, I can't wait for September. August is the first preseason.
Convince Georgia followers to give me some tickets to these soccer matches.
That's George. That's as George as it gets.
I know. One day, maybe they'll hear this interview.
Yeah. Before we go, I got one more question. Do you mind telling us a little bit about your involvement with the EC? The KSU
KSU Entrepreneurship Center. So Commission Track was the sponsor in kind of its initial year to help get things started. I really got introduced to it through a family friend, Dave Wallens. He actually does all of Commission Track's like stand-up banner signs. It's how I was originally introduced to him, and then he liked what I was doing. I'm willing to commit some time to the EC. We chatted through it, and I help on the kind of finance committee side, so mm-hmm. when they go out to raise money, I'll make some cold calls, one of my favorite things to do, of course. As well as I've offered to be, a mentor as well as a judge for like the KSU 100 or the EC 100. I can't remember what it was called, but it was
the KSU top 100. I actually competed yesterday for the top 25. Unfortunately, I didn't get through, but I mean, for me, I got what I wanted out from it. I mean, I grew so much. My idea and company is just so much further along. So I'm just happy I competed. I'm astounded that I got this far. And I mean, I was happy to be a part of it. So,
and that's the other, I mean, that touches on a note where, a lot of people perceive the risk of startups, kind of back to that topic. Mm-hmm. Well, if it doesn't work out, then I'm done. Mm-hmm. The thing is, any startup founder interviewing someone that has founded something of their own, you have an edge. Even if it failed terribly, mm-hmm. drove the bus off the side of a cliff.
Yeah.
You tried and you put yourself out there, which means you're probably a good fit for a chaotic environment where people need to be willing to go out on a limb mm-hmm. and not, fear failure.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was my logic. I wanted to go through the process. I was by no means ready to tackle it at all, but I was just like, I got nothing to lose. So mm-hmm. I went out there and I learned so much. I can't even tell you.
Well, hell yeah.
So just to wrap things up, one last question. If there's one thing that you know now that you wish you knew when you were starting out, what would that be?
Oof. That's a good question. To be more patient. Just patience goes a long way. A lot of times you want to just run. Especially on, getting on the sales side, getting in front of people and trying to get that meeting. Sometimes working on other people's schedule will get you further faster than trying to conform people to your schedule. So being dynamic with both scheduling and patient with people who need to reschedule a lot, don't get flustered, just remain, optimistic and pleasantly persistent, not pushy. But, mm-hmm. That I'd say just being more flexible and being more patient are the two kind of things that I've whether it's learned to do or have become more comfortable with that I, would have liked to have had when I first got started.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for coming out. And for our listeners, any way to contact you, what would be the best way to do that?
Well, like you said, if you just go to the Commission Track website, commissiontrack.com, a little bubble will pop up after about 20 seconds. And if you say hello, it'll be me that responds.
That's so awesome. I love that. That is, that is brilliant.
All right. And I'm Adam Wozniak.
And I'm Darren Parkinson. And we're Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.